Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later on in today's program, we're going to discuss the new feature-length documentary film Out of Plain Sight, based on a series of haunting reports by award-winning environmental journalist Rosanna Shaw. In 2020, she broke the story that as many as 500,000 barrels of toxic waste had been quietly dumped into the ocean off of Los Angeles decades ago, just right off the coast there. But first, we're going to turn to Hurricane Melissa, a Category 5 storm that has devastated parts of Jamaica, Cuba, and the Bahamas. Now, Jamaica was hit first on Tuesday when Melissa made landfall with sustained winds of 185 miles per hour, making it the most powerful hurricane to strike Jamaica in 175 years. According to The Guardian, four people were reported dead in Jamaica. In Haiti, 25 people, including 10 children, were killed when flooding caused a river to overflow its banks. And in eastern Cuba, authorities evacuated around 735,000 residents from coastal and low-lying areas as the storm approached. Now, by yesterday, Hurricane Melissa had moved north toward Bermuda, leaving a trail of destruction across multiple countries. So how are the media reporting on the links between the climate crisis and the role of fossil fuels in fueling these types of disasters? And what exactly explains the destructive nature of Hurricane Melissa? To help us discuss what is going on and what we know and how the media is covering this storm, we're very pleased to be joined by Matt Simon, a senior writer at Grist covering climate solutions. Prior to that, he spent over a decade at Wired magazine, and he's the author of three books, most recently, A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. Good to have you back with us, Matt.
And thanks for having me.
So, Matt, Hurricane Melissa was or has been particularly dangerous just because it formed so quickly and moved quite slowly. So that means it hung over Jamaica for a really long period of time, making the damage even worse. Can you talk about some of the other factors that made it so dangerous?
This is very much a climate change fueled storm. So the main thing to consider here is ocean temperatures. Hurricanes feed on warm waters, and the waters that this particular storm was traveling through were made up to 900 times more likely by climate change. That is just much more energy to go into the atmosphere to fuel these very, very strong winds. And in addition, climate change is increasing the amount of precipitation that a hurricane can drop on a place like Jamaica by up to 50%. So these two things together really led to some catastrophic damages in Jamaica.
Well, and there's already been some initial science on this. A separate study by scientists at Climate Central found that climate change increased Melissa's winds by 10%. And of course, we have the near record warm ocean waters that Melissa traversed. They've been about 1.2 degrees Celsius warmer than average. That these were up to 900 times more likely to be in those conditions because of human-caused climate change. So my question for you, Matt, is that how should journalists be reporting on this link? I know the science is relatively preliminary, but much of this is very well established in terms of these long-term trends. So how do you think the media should be covering that link?
I mean, we are a climate-focused website, so that's my job. I'm deep in the climate side of things, but with so many other climate-related disasters, so like intensifying heat waves, for example, intensifying flooding outside of hurricanes, the same factor of a warmer atmosphere holding more water is leading to just flooding elsewhere. That is not often enough talked about in stories in print or on TV, because I think it's just a little bit squishier in a sense. Like it's easy to quantify the casualties from a storm, the amount of rain that has fallen. It's a little bit more difficult to say that, okay, well, climate change made the wind speeds from a hurricane like Melissa 10% stronger. So I think it's an extremely important thing to continue going forward because all of these disasters are in some way touched by climate change.
So what do you say to other journalists, you know, if you have conversations with them who aren't as focused on climate change as you are at Grist, what do you recommend to them about how they try to integrate this understanding, the scientific consensus that we have with these types of extreme weather events?
Don't be afraid of scientists. They sound like they're very, very smart, and indeed they are. But you'd be surprised how basically across the board, they are extremely good communicators. They can distill this complicated science down into something that is easy for journalists to understand, and then for those journalists to communicate to the wider public. I think what's really important right now is that we are getting much faster, what are known as attribution studies. So these will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Climate Central, a group that provides experts to talk about these things, they did one on Monday, even before the storm made landfall. These reports are clear, and both in the way that they're written and in the unequivocal way that they're saying climate change is exacerbating these problems, and we should be incorporating that into the story, because I don't think a story is complete without doing so.
And we also have a fractured media environment now. Coverage for climate science, climate change is diminishing. We just saw reports that CBS News is laying off their climate reporting team. What concerns you when you look at the media landscape today and the importance and lack of information being drawn between climate change, climate science, and these extreme weather events?
My concern is that I think for a very long time, because climate change wasn't really reported enough in the media, that Americans might not have thought that climate change was affecting them in some way. But in fact, all Americans are now affected by climate change, whether that's through intensifying heat waves, increased rainfall events, sea level rise, these sorts of things. Going forward, we need to better communicate to the public that we can say immediately that almost all of these natural disasters are in some way exacerbated by climate change. We can then do follow-up stories when we get better studies about, okay, well, in a couple of weeks, somebody's going to come out and say that Hurricane Melissa produced X amount more rain, probably around 15%. And this is, I think, very important to communicate to the wider public that this is a crisis that is unfolding now. And unless we reduce our carbon emissions significantly, that will get worse and worse. And I think that, again, as a climate-focused website, we do this a lot, and it would be great to see in the wider media that there's a reason that Hurricane Melissa was one of the strongest storms on record, and that was largely due to climate change.
We're speaking with Matt Simon, senior writer at Grist, covering climate solutions, and we're talking about Hurricane Melissa, the devastating storm in the Caribbean, and the role of climate change in fueling the storm. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Well, Matt, perhaps one piece of good news, as you described it in your writing on this topic, is that the National Hurricane Center was able to accurately predict that Melissa would rapidly intensify. But as you noted in your recent writing, that kind of data and science on the trajectory of these storms is requiring continuous governmental support, but we've just seen the Trump administration slash scientific budgets and jobs. We're currently in a government shutdown. So what are your concerns as you look at the nature of this type of just basic science and weather communication and the role of the federal government right now?
I think this actually speaks to the dedication and the strength of this science that, as you say, scientists were able to accurately predict that this would rapidly intensify. And just briefly, because this is an extraordinary storm, to define rapid intensification, it's a jump in wind speeds of at least 35 miles per hour in 24 hours. This storm underwent extreme rapid intensification. It jumped from 70 miles per hour to 140 miles per hour in less than a day. So it doubled the threshold for rapid intensification. This is happening now twice as likely these Atlantic hurricanes are to rapidly intensify. Other research has shown that this rapid intensification is happening much more often closer to shore. And it's very important for scientists to predict this like they did with Hurricane Melissa, because this makes storms extremely dangerous. You might be predicting a category two, and all of a sudden a category four is coming ashore and a community is unprepared. This, I think, is all the more reason to protect this sort of science and to fund this sort of science. If you go to the National Hurricane Center's website, they're tracking Hurricane Melissa and all these other storms, even though Hurricane Melissa isn't making landfall in the United States. There is a banner at the top of the website that says that this is open during the shutdown. We're updating this because they understand just how essential not only the science is, but the communication to the wider public. This sort of science takes data, it takes dedication, it takes flying aircraft around these hurricanes. We can't do that if we're cutting the budget to the National Hurricane Center.
And Matt, what is the risk of this data from these federal agencies being politicized? We've seen this with the Trump administration and other data threats to politicize the information, like the economic statistics and data that the government normally puts out. Of course, we had in the first Trump administration that sort of infamous Sharpie drawing of where the hurricane trajectory was going to go. Are you worried about the politicization? Is that something that the public should be concerned about with this type of just basic communication on weather patterns, what extreme weather events?
Yeah, I mean, if we don't have the data, if we don't know what's happening, we can't save lives. Luckily, there are a lot of other groups popping up now that are doing this sort of analysis. So Climate Central, as I mentioned, does the analysis of data pretty rapidly about how climate change is increasing the severity of storms. There are European groups that track hurricanes as well. But nobody does it quite like the National Hurricane Center. There, it's a homegrown group that, again, does things like fly aircraft. They operate satellites. They operate weather balloons and buoys in the ocean. That takes time and that takes money. And it produces this raw data that not only predicts and saves lives when it comes to a hurricane about to make landfall, but this accumulation of data is really, really important. And to not politicize it is really important because it's a long-term data set. The more hurricanes, unfortunately, that hit the United States, the more data scientists get and the better they're able to adapt their models to better predict where those hurricanes are going to make landfall and at what intensity.
And Matt, as you're tracking the storm, it's still going. As I mentioned, it's still heading up towards Bermuda, but hopefully the worst is behind us. What are you covering next? What's sort of on your media roundtable radar in terms of storm trajectory in the story?
Well, we're not out of this yet, both for Hurricane Melissa, which is continuing its march north, but we're also not out of hurricane season. It might seem weird talking about the fuel for these hurricanes being high ocean temperatures, and we're getting toward the end of the year here. Shouldn't things be cooling down? The fact of the matter is that during the summer, this heat builds and builds and builds in the ocean, and we actually get the most hurricanes this time of year, September, October, compared to August or July. So the next month, we are going to be keeping an eye out for a storm that hopefully does not make landfall in the United States. We've been weirdly lucky this year. I've been at least tracking some storms that have come across the Atlantic marching west and actually turn north and head back east. So the East Coast and the Gulf Coast have been safe from that. But for the next month or so, we need to be very vigilant that we're not out of this quite yet.
And we have a caller, Elizabeth in San Francisco, dialing in. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that climate change really can't be mentioned in a vacuum, and I'm sure your guest knows this as well, that it has to do with the amount of investment that our society is placing on fossil fuels, even from, my union pension, for example, has been invested in that as well, and that's something we need to talk about. And also the fact that the differences that exist among the different Caribbean countries and the way that they were able to save lives is very significant. Cuba, for example, even despite 60 years of an economic blockade by the U.S., an illegal blockade, was able to evacuate hundreds of thousands of people because they put people first. And that's something we should also look at in terms of not only that, but also in terms of healthcare. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Elizabeth, for that comment. Matt, any reactions to Elizabeth's comment about the role of the media and the role of the government?
Yeah, I mean, it's a super important point here that just to not to harp on the utility of this sort of data and this sort of science, the researchers that are crunching the hurricane data, Cuba can figure out where to evacuate people in large part because of this sort of science. Because we also have these sorts of rapid intensification events happening closer to shore, that's making hurricanes all the more dangerous for these communities and coastal areas. Another thing I think that would be important to mention here is that when we're concerning hurricanes, it's the wind, it's the rainfall, but it's also something called a storm surge. These winds are so powerful that they force essentially a wall of water ashore. I haven't seen data yet on what exactly Melissa's ended up being, but they were predicting up to 13 feet of storm surge in Jamaica. And that just absolutely inundates and destroys these communities. We need better able to protect these communities, for example, with better infrastructure, restoring wetlands, actually, in places like Cuba and Florida, that sort of thing, acts as a natural buffer to protect these communities. So, yes, you're right. It takes a tremendous amount of investment, but these communities are going to come out all the stronger for it.
And we should also mention, according to the United Nations, small island nations like Jamaica are responsible for only 1% of global emissions, but they suffer some of the worst effects of climate change, like we've just seen with Hurricane Melissa. Matt Simon, senior writer at Grist, covering climate solutions and author of three books, including most recently, A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. Thank you for joining and giving us the latest on the coverage and what's happening with Hurricane Melissa. Greatly appreciate it.
And thank you.
Short break, so stay with us.